Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to identify the very best teachers to educate our children, and could rewarding top achievers help to improve student outcomes? The board of the Dallas Independent School District will vote next May on a proposal to overhaul the system by which teacher performance is assessed and change the criteria by which salaries are raised. Instead of increasing pay based on tenure and advanced degrees, DISD Superintendent Mike Miles is backing a plan to measure how effective educators are in the classroom, as indicated by administrators, student test scores, and student evaluations. Mike Miles joins us now to talk about what is called the Teacher Excellence Initiative. He is here as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. Mike, welcome back to Think.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So let's start with this. What's wrong with the way teachers have been evaluated and compensated in DISD in the past?
I think over many years, the research shows that we in education need to really look closely at how we recruit and retain our best and brightest teachers, how we reward excellence, but also how we counsel out the lowest performing teachers. Right now, the evaluation system is not differentiated. 98% of all teachers across America receive a meet expectations or satisfactory or proficient evaluation or higher, and only 2% aren't. And that sort of evaluation system is used only to remove the worst performing or the teachers who are at the very bottom with regard to proficiency. And so we need to do a better job of retaining, rewarding our best performers and differentiating the evaluation system.
So in the past, a teacher who went on to get a master's degree could earn more money. As it turns out, research has not indicated much of a correlation between acquisition of advanced degrees and performance in the classroom?
That's correct. After the first few years, advanced degrees really there's very little difference as far as effectiveness goes between a teacher with 5 or 7 years in the classroom and someone with 10 or 12 years in the classroom with a master's degree.
Which is not to say, I'm guessing you're not discouraging teachers from continuing their education if they're interested in doing this.
No, indeed. What has proven to be effective is an attitude of lifelong learning and continuous improvement. So you'll see that in our proposed Teacher Excellence Initiative, we will be looking at continuous learning. So a teacher who wants to be distinguished in the upper ranges of effectiveness has to show that they are lifelong learners. That could be with a master's degree, but it could also be with other courses or conferences that they attend where they're learning the skills and the trade to become master or excellent teachers.
So you have based this proposal for the Teacher Excellence Initiative on ideas that were identified in the MET study, which is short for Measures of Effective Teaching. Can you tell us a little bit about that project and what you found in it that struck you as valid?
Yeah, now we're basing the Teacher Excellence Initiative on a number of things, looking at the research. But the one that's most predominant is the MET study, Measures of Effective Teaching, done by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And Dallas ISD participated in that study a couple years ago. And the final report came out this year, earlier January of this year. And in that study, it showed that there are ways to measure effective teaching, number one. But number two, what is most valid and reliable is a multiple measures, looking at student achievement results, looking at performance, which is what teachers do actually in the classroom, and then third, student surveys or student input. And if you combine those three big areas, you're most able to define how effective a teacher is.
A lot of parents are wondering why parent input is not part of the calculus.
You know, that was not part of the MET study, and we have parent input as part of the principal's calculation, but we're just not at that point where the research is supporting that. So we want to start with really solid ground And the MET study seems to be a really good place to start.
So let's talk about student input, because certainly, I mean, most students are pretty sophisticated about which teachers they can connect with and, mm-hmm. and all that. But are there any concerns that teachers who feel like they might not get a good evaluation would sort of trade grade favors in exchange mm-hmm. for a good review? And what do you do about that?
I think the MET study showed that the student input is a better predictor of teacher effectiveness than even the performance evaluations from the principals. So it's research-based questions. It's not a popularity contest. We're not going to try to invent our own questions. We're going to use those questions that have been research-based. And there's several companies out there that have already done this and have had their information validated. And so we're going to look at questions like, do you feel challenged in class? Do you feel bored? Does your teacher help you when you get stuck? Does your teacher challenge you to work through obstacles? Things like that. And you're right. Kids are pretty sophisticated. All of us who've had kids know that they can usually identify the strongest teachers and those who aren't. And the kids, the teachers who challenge their students, you know, my experience as a middle school teacher is that, you know, as long as you're fair, kids actually want you to be tough on them when they're doing something wrong, right? But you also have to be very fair. But those who just show films or just, you know, try to, you know, be popular, that's not always what the kids are going to pick as the best teacher. They're going to pick the ones that challenge them and help them learn what they're supposed to learn.
So administrators have long evaluated the teachers that work in their schools, and you can look at this in a couple of different ways. Some teachers have said, well, this is all well and good, but teachers know when the evaluation is happening, and they put on, the quote I heard the other night was a dog and pony mm-hmm. show.
So one of the things that's also part of the MET study, but also other research shows that teachers should receive multiple visits, and usually from more than one person, to assess whether they're effective as a teacher. And some of those visits should probably be unannounced mm-hmm. so that you avoid the dog and pony show. In Dallas, we've had 2 years now, or 1.5 years, by the end of this year, it'll be 2 years, of multiple spot observations or walkthroughs of classrooms. So each principal provides around 6 spot observations or walkthroughs of classrooms per semester for each teacher, all 9,900 teachers. So, and some receive more than that. But that's a lot of practice. That's a lot of good feedback for teachers. And you'll get a good idea of how well that teacher is teaching if you're in the classroom a lot. The once a year or even twice a year formal observations do not provide an effective look at how well you're teaching.
Okay, let's talk about test scores as a measure of teacher teacher assessment. Obviously, you have to have something that is objective that you can look at. There's a lot of debate over how effective standardized testing is. Are there allowances made for progress made by children who remain well below grade mm-hmm. level but have progressed throughout the course of a year?
That's a really important question, and it's a really important concept for us to think about and build into the teacher evaluation system. In other words, we're not just looking at whether kids are proficient or not on the one exam. We're looking at multiple measures, number one. But number two, we're looking at growth. We have 3 ways of measuring a student's proficiency on an exam. One is whether or not they met the proficiency bar. We call that status. The second way is through value-added measurement. On the STAR exam or the state assessment and our own district assessments, so value added. And then the third measurement is a normed reference measurement where we put students in academic peer groups. And it's just a Dallas competition, so it's not against the state. It's just our DISD kids. And so you might have 12,000 or 13,000 seventh graders taking the seventh grade math test at the state level, or the ACP, which is a district semester exam. And those 12,000 DISD students are competing against themselves, but we break those 12,000 students up into different peer groups, 5 different ones, based on their level of proficiency. So the kids who are always stellar at grade level already, they're competing against those kids. The kids who are like Mike, who are, you know, in the lowest bucket, and, you know, are 2 or 3 years behind in seventh grade math, they're competing against the other kids who are 2 or 3 years behind in seventh grade math. And the job of the teacher is to ensure that those kids grow relative to the peers.
So there will be 9 levels of teacher performance, essentially, plus a special level for brand new teachers called novice. Mm-hmm. And they go from unsatisfactory to master teacher. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a basic sense of, I mean, obviously unsatisfactory is unsatisfactory, but what we can expect from teachers all along that spectrum?
Yes. This is one of the things we're going to have to get used to if this passes. There'll be a number of teachers who are not unsat, but they are progressing. And for teachers early in their career, it's not uncommon to be progressing in any field, right? We haven't arrived yet just because we start a job. If in a true profession, you're going to get better, at least initially the first couple of years. Some people are stars right off the bat. They're naturals. But most of us are progressing. We have a ways to go before we've arrived, so to speak, or, you know, we're excellent or great teachers. And so you should see that one of the concepts we have in the evaluation system is you can't be rated a proficient teacher unless you've had at least 3 years in the classroom. So you might be a superstar the first year, but we think greatness, being a great teacher, or even being a proficient teacher, you have to show it over time. You can't be a one-hit wonder, you know. You can't be a one-year wonder. You have to show that you're great over time. So you're going to see teachers at progressing levels. You're going to see most teachers, or a considerable number of teachers, at the proficient 1, 2, or 3 level. And then you're going to see some exemplary teachers, but not as many. We got to keep the bar really high for what an exemplary and master teacher really is.
Will those rankings be made public? Because I've got kids in public school and they're not geniuses, but I want them to have all the very best teachers and not the ones maybe who are still learning. Mm-hmm.
Right now, so Chapter 21, we call it Chapter 21 teachers. Their evaluations are confidential, so they will not be made public.
Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is simply that you don't want parents to know who their students have?
You know, I think we're going to have a broader discussion with the teachers, our principals, our board, and our community around what level of transparency we want for the results. And we haven't had that discussion yet. I think at some point, in my mind, there wouldn't be anything wrong with having at least a general knowledge of what percentage of the teachers are proficient or exemplary at a school, what percentage are progressing, that sort of thing.
Do you imagine a rebalancing by campus? So in other words, once you have these rankings established and you have a number of teachers, do you want to make sure that no one campus has too many or too few master teachers or proficient teachers, that sort of thing?
We want schools to grow, and the goal for any principal would be to have, you know, 100% of your teachers be exemplary. Now, that's probably unlikely, but that's what I would be working towards if I were a principal, moving and growing all my teachers so that at least they're proficient and as many distinguished teachers as we possibly can have. However, we will be incentivizing teachers to move to schools that are struggling.
We'll talk about that in just a minute. My guest is Mike Miles, superintendent of the Dallas Independent School District. We're talking about the proposed Teacher Excellence Initiative as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. If you'd like to weigh in, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this January to design your own Master's of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Human Rights, Creative Writing, and others. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Superintendent Mike Miles of the Dallas Independent School District about the proposed Teacher Excellence Initiative that will be voted on by the DISD Board in May of next year. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, ask a question, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. So, Mike, you mentioned there will be incentives for teachers to move to struggling schools, mm-hmm. which I want you to talk about this because it would seem that teachers who are in, say, higher socioeconomic areas have it made in the shade, and teachers who teach students who are economically disadvantaged will really struggle mightily to get to, say, the exemplary or master levels.
Yeah, I think there'll be teachers who are in some of those higher socioeconomic areas that might disagree with you, that you know, teaching is a hard job no matter where you are.
And forgive the generalization,
yeah, no,
but you understand the nature
do.
Of the question.
And the truth of it is, across the country, and Dallas is no exception, we know that our kids who struggle the most, who are the least proficient, should have the most proficient or most distinguished teachers. And that's the essence of your question. So how are we going to do that? We're not going to force it, though. We're not going to move our distinguished teachers or highly proficient teachers to the student or schools where the kids are struggling the most. But we do want to incentivize that. So part of the Teacher Excellence Initiative has in it a provision that if you work in what's called a Tier 1 school, which is our lowest proficiency schools, you will receive extra points just for working in a Tier 1 school. Out of a 100-point scale, you get 3 points the first year you work in that school, 4 points the second year, 5 points the third year, and every year after that you work. And that's a big difference that can move you up. That could be that potentially move you up one level as a result of those 5 points. So that's an incentive for teachers and a recognition that in some of our struggling schools, it is going to be difficult for a teacher. It is difficult. The challenges are great for teaching.
Do you have a sense of what the breakdown will be of teachers at each of the 9 levels mm-hmm. once these rankings are underway?
Yeah, there will be a target distribution. And all that means is, you know, when you have 9,900 teachers, when you assess them rigorously, most statistical data like that will turn into a normal distribution, mm-hmm. like a bell curve. So if the audience will picture a bell curve, you're going to have some people at the high end, most people in the middle, and then some people at the low end. And so that's kind of what the distribution will probably look like.
How do you make decisions about how much assistance to give to those who are at the lower levels and struggle to rise out of there? I mean, mm-hmm. at what point do you say to somebody, this is not working out, and how much is it worth maybe putting some extra effort into developing those teachers?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question, because that's another very important concept that's often overlooked. This teacher evaluation initiative can't be a good one or a fair one if we don't also invest in professional development. Now, we've been doing a lot of that with job-embedded professional development, making sure principals are instructional leaders, having an instructional coach, at least one at every school, and things like that, having Saturday classes and every one Tuesday a month after school, classes for that, and on and on. But what we're going to do with the Teacher Excellence Initiative is, once we identify teachers who are progressing, then we're going to invest even more in their training and development. And it's incumbent upon us to not only offer those workshops, but also do real-time coaching, on job-embedded coaching, and offer lessons that are targeted to their needs so that they can become proficient. At the same time, and I'm going to be honest, there'll be a percentage, and I don't know how big a percentage, but there'll be some teachers who over time won't progress fast enough. And that those are the group of that's a percentage of teachers will cancel out.
Is it fair to tie principals' compensation to how well their teachers are doing, since they're making the hiring decisions and then they are supervising the work of these teachers?
Yes. In fact, the principal evaluation system right now has part of their evaluation tied to the growth of their staff, how well the quality of instruction is. And so a lot of it is tied to the teacher's performance. We will also be bringing in May to the board a compensation package or plan that ties principal evaluations to compensation.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Rita in Plano. Hi, Rita.
Hi. First, thank you for taking my call. And Mr. Miles, I'm very excited about you being in the DISD. I'm very interested in education. I have two girls myself, and I just, you know, I'm thrilled about the Common Core. I know that 44 states have adopted the Common Core, but Texas is not one of them. Is DISD going to try to adopt the Common Core? Because I think it will be a great thing for all the students to be on standards so that when they move from one state to the other, they're, you know, learning similar things instead of, you know, being behind or something.
Thanks for your call, Rita.
Thanks for the call also and the question. The answer is that, you know, we're following Texas's guidelines around the standards. And so we have new, more rigorous STAR and EOC, you know, state tests, standards. And so we are gearing up, aligning our curriculum to those standards. If Texas ever adopts a Common Core, we'll be doing those. But in the meantime, we have no plans to change any of the standards. That's a state-level decision.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We have had some emails about how the standards will be different for, say, teachers of students with disabilities or with special needs that might affect their performance.
Mm-hmm. You know, all of our students and all of our teachers have standards and objectives for students. Special needs students have objectives and they have standards they have to learn. Indeed, today I was at our multiple career school, a magnet school actually, and there are schools with disabilities, students with disabilities, but they were all learning. They had objectives, they had demonstrations of learning that they had to follow, and it was very relevant and tied to skills that kids will need once they graduate. So I think in that way, we're still going to be able to see the effectiveness of the teacher to get those students the objectives and the standards that they need.
Back to the phones now. This time we'll speak with Becky in Dallas. Hey, Becky.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about how the new evaluation system will affect staff that is professional staff that is not necessarily responsible for A, either a subject that is tested, or B, someone like the school librarian, the school nurse, or the counselor, and how those, my understanding of what I've heard is that some of those people would not be eligible for increases based upon their own professional growth because of that particular, the fact that they don't have anything that's, you know, any scores to tie their abilities to. So I'm interested in finding out more about that.
Thanks for your call.
It's a great question, and our goal eventually is to have 100% of what's known as TRIPS, our teachers and counselors, instructional coaches, all on the evaluation system. It will require us to identify, and this is we're doing that now. We're almost done identifying measures of achievement for teachers in the non-core areas, not just the core areas. And so the question is, what can you measure as far as a teacher's effectiveness if they're an art teacher or PE teacher or a counselor? And we're in the process of identifying those items, and we'll be able to place those teachers on the evaluation system as well.
What kind of ongoing growth do you expect teachers to achieve from 1 year to the next or 1 year to 2 or 3 years later?
Well, the goal is to have at least a teacher be proficient.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the goal, and that's the expectation, is that if you're progressing, that you move through progressing one or progressing two until, you know, to the point where you're proficient. You can't hang out in progressing. That's a phrase we use. But you can't stay at progressing for 4 or 5 years, because our kids deserve and need proficient teachers. Now, you can hang out at proficient if you so desire, but I think most teachers are going to try to move forward on this effectiveness level scale so that they become exemplary or master teachers.
Could we afford having a larger number of exemplary and master teachers than maybe we have today, or that than we have compensated according to the old system?
And the answer is yes. Now, obviously, you can't have 9,900 teachers at the exemplary level being paid, you know, or master level, which is 90,000, or at the exemplary level, exemplary one, at 72,000. That is not sustainable. If we ever get to that point, we will raise the bar. But the other thing is, we can afford to pay more money in salaries, kind of like we do now. Salary increases at any district right now is a recurring expense, unless a district ever takes money away, which nobody does. So it eats up more and more of the general operating revenue. Right now, Dallas spends around 45% of its M&O, maintenance and operation money. The layperson may call it the general operating fund, for its classroom teacher salaries. As long as we keep that percentage below 52 or 55 on the outside, we're going to be fine. So we've got some room to grow in that. And worst comes to worst down the road, if we're really getting the achievement results that, you know, let's say you have a lot of highly proficient teachers or distinguished teachers, that would also mean that achievement is really moving up. And that's the goal. And if we get to the point where achievement is so high that, you know, we risk going over 52 or 53% of our M&O into classroom teacher salaries, I think we'll ask the community at that time to see if they'll give us more money for classroom teacher salaries.
And if this were to take effect in, is it 2014, 2015, is that your goal that this would begin?
That's the goal.
Okay. If this were to happen, say a 25-year veteran with a master's degree who is making, I don't know what that would be at this point, $60,000, 50,000?
25 years as a... with a master's degree, yeah, about 63,000, 64,000.
That teacher doesn't get dropped down to 47,000.
One of the things we've said to teachers already is that nobody will go below their 2014-2015 salary. Mm-hmm. So whatever you start with in August of next year, September of next year, that's your floor. And we did that for a couple of reasons. One, because we're not trying to save money on this, number one, but number two, we're not trying to ruin the livelihoods of our teachers. We know they work hard. We know it's a noble profession. It's the hardest profession, and we've had a lot of dedicated people who put a number of years in, and so we don't want to undermine that, and we don't want to send a signal that teachers aren't valued. So yes, while we're trying to retain and recruit the best and brightest teachers into the profession and to keep our best and brightest, and we want to differentiate our evaluation system, we're not trying to, you know, pull the rug out from any teacher. So that's the floor, and I think that will help people get past this notion that we're trying to do something bad to teachers. We're not.
I was speaking to a group of teachers the other night for a project we're working on here at the station, and the thing that came up that really, frankly, surprised me was that they don't feel often like they are thanked enough or, mm-hmm. or acknowledged enough in ways that are meaningful to them. And although I'm sure they'd all love more money, that wasn't what they were talking about.
You know, it's funny. I had a session with the executive directors this morning, and we went over this article called The Irreplaceables. And the irreplaceables are the top teachers in any district, and they say the same things, that they're not thanked enough, they're not recognized for their performance. And so there's a number of strategies to use to do so. And, you know, we're going to be training the principals next week and placing a lot of attention on what do you do in your school to challenge the teachers, because that's one thing teachers want. They want effective feedback. They want recognition. They want leadership opportunities. And that has to happen at the school level. It can happen a little bit at the district level, but we have 9,900 teachers. It's got to be at the school level that these things happen. And so I think you're right. But the other thing that the irreplaceables say, these top teachers, they need and want a different evaluation system. They don't want to be evaluated the same as a teacher down the hall who is not performing, who has, you know, kind of checked out, and they want to be differentiated. They want to say, hey, I may be a six-year teacher, but you know what? I'm knocking out of the park. I'm getting good achievement results. I'm working hard. I'm staying after school. I have good rapport with my kids and good rapport with my parents. And I see a teacher over there who's getting the exact same evaluation and is also getting much more money than I'm getting, and they're not doing half as well as I'm doing. And those are the teachers you lose after a while because there is no differentiation and they're being treated like everybody's treated exactly the same. So I think a new evaluation system that does show that, well, have a differentiated scale. You're proficient. It's not just the money. It's an evaluation. You are master, you're exemplary, you're proficient, or you're progressing. I think that is going to help the irreplaceables.
And there is an avenue to appeal a decision, a ranking that a teacher disagrees with.
Yes, right now, and we're working through the details on that, but right now, if your achievement is really high and your performance score is low, there may be some that seems to be a disconnect. And that's one area where you could appeal your evaluation.
So it's not just a matter of I got a bad evaluation and I want to appeal it. There are specific conditions to be met before that can be set in motion.
That's right. We're not going to review every single evaluation when you have thousands and thousands of evaluations taking place. But there will be conditions where we see, look, this looks like a pretty big discrepancy. Let's have a review of that outside of the building.
My guest is Dallas Independent School District Superintendent Mike Miles. We're talking about the proposed Teacher Excellence Initiative. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this January to design your own Master's of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, human rights, creative writing, and others. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. As part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative, we're speaking today with Dallas ISD Superintendent Mike Miles, who has proposed a new Teacher Excellence Initiative that would tie teacher performance to teacher pay. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can email think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Anna, who says, I work with refugee students, and I am concerned with teaching excellency, but also with fairness in testing. How would limited English proficient students and students with little former education at all fit into the testing system or the student evaluation portion?
Mm-hmm. So again, that's one of the areas we're looking at. How do you assess a teacher, and what are the achievement metrics? Now, every teacher has objectives for kids, and all kids are required to grow. And so we look at the growth of students and students who come from different countries, students who have English as their second language, and the English as a second language students are paired with other English as second language students. And the teacher's job is to get that child to grow in their English proficiency or whatever math. And so we're going to be looking at those sorts of metrics to see. It's not, you know, we're not going to say, well, we can't measure the growth of this child just because he can't speak English. No, I think we can. I mean, my son took math and French in French immersion class. So he was like an ESL student, right? Mm-hmm. So, and yet he still had to learn math. And so the effectiveness of the teacher is how well can you do that when a child doesn't know the language and still learn math?
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Toby in Addison. Hi, Toby.
Hi. Interesting discussion. I would like to ask the superintendent, you've had a lot of discussion about ratings and tiers and categorizing teachers and all of that, but what I'm not hearing from the superintendent in this discussion is what concrete things are they coming up with to actually change the classrooms or the way teachers teach in order for students to learn better, as opposed to just rating the teachers. And then the second thing is, at the very beginning of the program, when he was talking about the different criteria used for rating the teachers, I find it a little disturbing that the parent feedback is, in fact, not being considered, while the student feedback is being considered. I'm not in school anymore, but I remember what it was like to be a student. And to make an analogy, which I hope won't be too offensive, I think that asking most students when they're in school what they think of particular teachers is kind of like asking a medical patient getting an enema what they think of the person giving them the enema.
Okay, well, I appreciate the call, Toby. You put a lot on the table there, some of which we've touched on a bit before, but Mike, maybe you can go back and address both of his questions.
Yes, the first is around the professional development. You don't want to be too prescriptive and say you have to teach this way. You do want to help teachers with core instructional practices so that they have a chance at doing well with regard to raising student achievement results. So, for example, we've spent a lot of time in the last year and a half on alignment. What does that look like? What are the standards? And we've done a lot of professional development around that. What is the lesson objective, and is it tied to what is a good effective lesson objective? Is it tied to the standards? How do kids demonstrate that learning? We've trained them on that. How to engage kids? Multiple response strategies are core practices. But we don't do, we don't say you have to teach this way. We do have instructional coaches. We've invested quite a bit in instructional coaches and academic facilitators who assist the principal in helping teachers find the strategies that are the best ones to teach a certain standard. We've also really emphasized instructional leadership for the principal and assistant principals, and they too go into the classroom on a weekly basis in many cases or a couple times a month and help teachers and give them good, effective feedback. So those things are helping teachers improve the quality of instruction, is exactly what we're looking for in the rubric, and then also raise student achievement. With regard to the parent, and it's not that parent feedback isn't included at all. There is a rubric on the performance portion where teachers are also scored broadly on how well they communicate with parents, how they are accessible to parents, and how professional they are. So there's a little bit of input that the parents have there. But with regard to classroom instruction, I'm sorry, parents aren't in the classroom enough for most parents. In a given classroom of 25 kids, how many parents are visiting the classrooms regularly? Kids are there every day.
Can you talk a little bit about this? You've been in Dallas for some time now. When you look at the ongoing challenges that exist in this district, and you look at the reasons why, compared with some other large urban districts in the country, we are not faring as well, what do you think has been the problem historically and into the present time specifically with DISD?
Every district is unique, so everybody has different challenges, so it's hard to compare. But just looking at Dallas ISD, there are a number of things we can be proud of, and I always want to emphasize that first. And things aren't in chaos or anything like that. We are improving in achievement. We are improving in graduation rates and things like that. If I had to say, how can we get better? What do we need to do? The focus has to be on effective teaching and effective principles and the quality of instruction. It has to be that level of focus on raising those expectations, both among our staffs and among our students and parents, around what our kids can do. Raise expectations with effective teaching and effective leaders in the schools. That's what's going to transform the district. We can talk about blended learning, flipped classrooms, technology, all of which is important, all of which we're doing. We can talk about a different curriculum. We can talk about bell schedules and transportation. We can do all those things which are also important. But in the end of the day, the number one thing that's going to get us to where we need to be, which is college and career-ready students, is an effective teacher and high-quality instruction.
So that speaks to this email from Jennifer, who wants to know what strategies will be in place to attract new highly qualified teachers.
So several things. Number one, I think the evaluation system, where you can see that there's going to be great challenge, but a focus on instruction, a focus on performance, results-oriented, and that we're going to compensate people. You can be a fifth-year teacher in Dallas and earn $51,000 or $54,000. You couldn't do that anywhere else in the area as a fifth-year teacher. And so we think after a couple of years, you know, we're going to have fifth, sixth, seventh-year teachers around the area say, hey, you know, I think I'm going to go to Dallas because I'm an effective teacher. I'm going to get results for kids, but I'm also going to earn a lot more than my colleagues in these other districts. So I think that's one thing. But the second, another strategy is to recruit early and attract early and to have what we call advanced contracts where pending board approval and pending, you know, background checks, those sorts of things, we recruit teachers into Dallas ISD early.
If teachers come in from another district and they have a certain amount of experience, do they have to start over at progressing, or can they sort of be slotted into the proficient level, for example?
Yeah. And one other important thing before I answer that question that I failed to mention, you know, we're also trying to grow our own. So, you know, the strategies around instructional practices, all of this instructional feedback and the professional development is an attempt to also ensure that our progressing and proficient teachers grow to even more proficient teachers along the way. And I think that's going to help. With regard to new teachers from outside the district coming in, where will they be placed? They can be placed at progressing 1, 2, or 3, or proficient progressing 1 or 2, or proficient 1 if they have evidence that they have been able to raise student achievement and get results and have high-quality instruction. But most will be brought in at the progressing 1 or progressing 2 level.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with David in Dallas. Hi, David.
Hello. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
I wanted to ask Dr. Miles about how he would respond to what I'm seeing as a parent, where the students are under, this year especially, more under more pressure than ever. And the schools are even asking some of the students to stop their extracurricular so they can test better. The kids are under lots of stress and strain, and how he would respond to that.
Well, first of all, we're very supportive of extracurricular. In fact, we're going to try to make sure that kids have enough time in art, music, and specials and PE, so that if we're going to assess art, music, PE, that it's a fair assessment of the teacher. Got to ensure that the kids have the time in those subject matters. And we've made a particular effort to expand after-school activities and after-school clubs and also tutoring. Yes, some in the core areas after school. So I think that's going to continue and, in fact, even grow. With regard to assessments and stress, you know, I'm in the schools all the time. I just came from Ben Milam Elementary School in Dallas, and also, I told you the multiple careers. Those are the two schools I went to before coming here. There's absolutely no stress that I could tell, and we even talked about it with the staff and the kids. And the kids are doing just fine. And that Milam Elementary School is performing well. Their teachers are working hard They're getting results. The kids are don't seem stressed at all. They're smiling. They're having fun learning. It's a learning, professional learning environment, professional learning culture. Assessments. Yes. I think assessments sometimes get a bad rep. You know, teachers have been assessing kids all the time, with or without state assessment, with or without district assessments. We've actually cut down on the number of district assessments, knowing that teachers are doing their own assessments. So you see in Dallas, we only have the district semester exams, the mid-year, so December, and then end of year in May. And that's it for the district-dictated exams. Now, then we have state exams. We can't. There's nothing to do about those, right? And I'm not sure that's a bad thing, because at some point we have to assess how we're doing relative to other districts. To say that we're going to have an art exam, well, it's no different than an art teacher having a final exam. Instead of exam, think of it as a demonstration of learning. So when you do a self-portrait because you've been taught to do a self-portrait in art, is that an assessment or is that a demonstration of learning? Well, we're doing self-portraits, and kids are getting a grade for it. So that's not an additional stressor. That's just another demonstration that kids do anyway. And that's what we're going to try to do, not have a whole bunch of multiple choice tests.
When you go into a school, obviously you're there in large part to check on your employees, the administrators and the teachers, but you're also there to connect with students. Are there standard questions that you always ask students about their experience in DISD schools?
That's the best part of my job, is when I get to go into the schools and I talk to kids. I was at Samuel High School, or Sunset rather, and looked at walked into the lunchroom and just had a great conversation with the kids about what they thought about the food. And so there's no set.
How did that go?
Well, you know, I was impressed. They said it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. The one criticism was from the football players, who said it wasn't enough. And so generally they liked the cafeteria food, which, you know, in my day, we never would say that. But in every school, it's a little bit different. Today, I just ask the kids, like I usually do in the classroom, so what are you learning? And, you know, how do you feel about it? And, you know, what can you tell me about it? And just things like that. I think I get a good feel for how well the kids are learning, and I get a feel for how they enjoy school. You know, in the hallways, I like to talk to the kids about, you know, some of their most fun activities and their best subject or their favorite subject. So it's not really scientific. It's just talking to them.
It's taking the pulse.
Yeah.
Mike Miles is superintendent of the Dallas Independent School District. You can learn more about the proposed Teacher Excellence Initiative at DISD.org. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's fun being here. Thank you.
Mike Miles was with us as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Christine McConnell prepares our podcast. And Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter at ChrisBoydThink, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.